following podcast is hashtag Boone approved. It's time for another edition of the Brett Boone Podcast.
Remember when me and you almost went to blows? Lou sent me down three times too, so I know what you're talking about.
With your host, MLB All-Star, Brett Boone.
Bottom line is, you will become a successful major league hitter by hitting pitchers' mistakes.
As he sits down with his sports and entertainment friends from around the world.
You are not going to be a successful major league hitter if you hit pitchers' pitches.
This isn't just any former jocks podcast.
To change the outcome, you got to change the income. You got to change what goes in. Then that changes what goes out.
Often duplicated, but never replicated. Just like his bat flip.
Okay, now the party starts. The responsibility starts now.
Now in its fourth year, this is the one and only Brett Boone Podcast.
Welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. I'm Brett Boone, and today I'm joined by a six-time Pro Bowler. He's currently an analyst for the Las Vegas Raiders. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Eric Allen to the program. Eric, thanks for joining the Brett Boone Podcast.
What's going on, Boone, man?
I got an eagle in the house. And then the Boone family, especially Aaron Boone, man, he's still to this day. Yeah. I'll tell you. Sunday comes around and I'll talk to him. You can't talk to him on Sunday. He's got his eagle. He's got his Eagles jersey on. His son's all into it. The Eagles lose and he's a. He's like legitimately in a bad mood. I have my teams. You know, I pull for him. Yeah, I went to USC. I pull for USC. But if USC, if they lose, I don't lose any sleep.
I tell you, I have four boys. And two of them are Eagle fans and two are Raider fans. And if I'm west of Texas, it's all Raider Nation. And if I'm east of Texas, it's Fly Eagles Fly, you know. So,
yeah.
But right now, both, you know, we're all kind of bumming right now. The teams are not playing very well on either coast. So we have to figure out a way here to get the ball rolling football wise.
We had, because I grew up in Jersey when Dad was in Philly, and that's where we're at the Vet where you played.
Right.
Where it was a shared place. You shared it with the Phillies. Eric, and I think we talked off camera about this when we were at Andre Reed's golf tournament a few months ago. But, man, I remember coming to the Vet as a little kid and Jaworski's over there and, you know, Wilbert Montgomery. And I mean, back in the day now, Harold Carmichael. My favorite was Tony Franklin with the barefoot. I mean, this was back in the day. Even when I was younger, Roman Gabriel was there.
I'd
go out and they'd throw me passes when I was, you know, 4 or 5 years old. I thought that was so cool, though. And Dad was just there the offseason working out. But I got to watch the Eagles. Well, that's old school right there. That's back when we always shared the venues and both sports were in the same place.
You know what? That takes me back to the beginning of my career. I was drafted by Buddy Ryan and the Eagles in 1988. And that's similar to when the Phillies were rolling a little bit. Lenny Dykstra.
Yeah.
They had a bunch of really, really good players. And, you know, it was this door that was always locked that was the end of our locker room. And I never knew. You know, I'm a young guy. I don't know. I'm like telling my equipment manager, man, where does this door go? And never mind, you know, Rook, you know, you don't worry about it. And one time, one of my buddies was like, man, open this door, man, so I can see what the heck's going on here. He opens the door, and it was the day of a game for the Phillies. They have this huge spread on, you know, as far as what they're about to eat, you know. And they're all kind of lounging around, kicking back. And I'm like, wow, it's a total difference of locker rooms and how we're treated, right? The Phillies have this big spread, you know, of all this good eats and food and stuff. And we're in here, you know, hardly can get a jock strap. So the Phillies at that time were the king of the roost.
Well, I'll tell you what, I got a good topic for us a little later, but that brings me to, that's because we play every day. We got 162. You guys got to do it once a week. Come on. How tough could it be? I was looking at your career. You played 14 years, and the thing that jumped out at me, you know, you had the Pro Bowls, you were an All-Pro twice, but your entire career, you missed 7 games. And I look at the athlete today, especially on the baseball side, where it seems like guys just drop like flies. Now, it's a different generation. I understand it. They're treated – the money's different. So there's a little more emphasis on, hey – if we got a guy making $20, $30 million, let's make sure he's all right. We don't want, you know, we're going to protect our investment. And I completely understand that. But it's just a different time. When I was coming up, it's like, man, if I was injured a little bit, the difference between injured and hurt, it depends on my status at the time. When I was a young kid, if I was something that I knew the trainers would want to take me out or maybe, hey, you sit out a couple of days, I wouldn't tell anybody. And right. I'd almost take the training room home with me and wrap myself and come in. How you feeling? I'm feeling great. Yeah. Now, as I got a little tenure, as I got older, I could tell the trainer, listen, don't worry about this. I'm fine. I can play with it. And they trust it. You earn that. Yeah, that's called earning your stripes. They'll trust you. But today it's different. I mean, I see guys, you get hit by a pitch. It's like they're putting them on the 10-day IL before they hit the dugout. And I'm going, it's a different mentality. And I don't really blame the players because I think it's the culture. And I think that's how they're brought up. It's like, if you're not 100%, we don't play. We take care of our injuries. We move on. Explain the NFL side of that when you played versus what you see today.
Yeah, definitely a change. The competitive nature of the league and, I go back to, the mid-80s all the way up till 2001, 2002. The competitive nature early on was you didn't want to get Wally Pipped. Right. As a player, you wanted to secure your spot, make sure the team can count on you. And you took pride in being able to suit up every week and understanding your body and knowing what you could and could not play with. Early on, there was definitely some situations where high ankle sprain. I'll have to give you a story. Year two, we're about to fly to New Orleans, and it's the Saturday or the Friday before we're about to fly down. And we're in the locker room and we're, coursing around and, like play fighting and wrestling and stuff like that. Because, of course, we have Reggie White, one of the greatest players to ever play. He's a big WWE fan. At that time, it was WWF. So we're, we're kind of doing our stuff, Ric Flair and all this stuff. I pick this guy up and I roll my ankle. And it is right before we go to practice. Mind you, this is the latter of the week. We're flying the next day, so the practice is, like, really light. But I rolled my ankle, and I rolled it good. And everyone is, like, super nervous because Buddy Ryan is, like, he's a drill sergeant.
Right.
So we go to practice, and special teams-wise, he's calling out special teams, and I'm over, like, drinking water, like, oh, yeah, the next guy will take my spot. I know what to do. And so he's starting to get a sense of people are trying to hide me.
Right. Like you're getting in trouble. You're getting in trouble with mom and dad.
Everybody knows, the trainers, everybody. They just don't want to tell Buddy until later on. And all of a sudden, he blows his whistle, and he's like, two-minute drill, starters on starters.
And you're going, how am I going to fake this?
Oh, my goodness, man. I walk out there, and I have to tell him, like, hey, coach, this happened, but I'm going to be okay. And I was able to play the next day. And I knew in my mind, like, I didn't want to let the team down. I didn't want to let Buddy down. And I have a standard, I'm not a tough guy, but I know what I can play with. And that has kind of been my thing throughout the course of my career. But I learned that from the older guys, like situations like, hey, man, we need this guy on the football field. He's smart enough to be able to get around the injury he has or the hurt ankle or knee has, he can make it work. Later on in my career, obviously, when we were starting to play Sunday and then Thursday games, my head coach at that time was John Gruden, and I wouldn't practice if we had like a short week because he knew, he trusted me that I'd be able to, play at a certain level and make plays, but I didn't practice hard for those weeks knowing that I was going to play in the game. Nowadays, totally different. I understand the guys want longevity because they're able to get that, family altering money.
Right.
But you can see the difference between players who are able to suit up on Sunday, no matter what. We have a guy, Max Crosby, who's our defensive end. He's a throwback guy. It doesn't matter. We have to keep him. The organization at points have to keep him off the football field. He's just so excited about being in the league and playing, even though he's one of the best players in the league. So there are some exceptions, but for the most part, guys are trying to make sure they have longevity in their career so they can make all that great money. I don't blame them, but when it comes down to trying to play to help your team get to that next level, I hope everyone has that excitement, that focus to want to go out there and give their all to help their team win.
I agree with you too. And you said, you know, you had an obligation, you had to get in there. I thought as a player, my mindset was, if I'm sitting on the bench, how am I going to hit whatever it was, 25, 30 homers? How am I going to drive in 100 if I'm sitting on the bench? If I stay here too long and I would have driven in 100, maybe I drive in 96. Well, there's a big difference between 96 and 100. You can't say 100.
That's right.
So I would assume in the football wise, you're thinking not only are you one of the best players on the team and your teammates depend on you being in that lineup,
right?
But you got to put your numbers up too. We got a short window to make a lot of money, but it's short. And, it's tough for me to have any other mindset, than I got to be in there at all costs. And I know, from a team standpoint in baseball, it was a difference when the main guys were in there and,
right.
You play baseball, it's 162 games. Very rarely are you 100%. But you have a tolerance and you know what you can play with. You know when you're affected. You know when that guy behind you that would fill in for you. You know when you're so battered that he would be a better option. Well, then you kind of got to use your sense and say, "Okay, I'm not helping the team right now." But I know I know it was a big boost for me always having those main guys in the lineup. It's even if they weren't there, just the presence of them being there, I felt give us a better chance to win. So it's a new era. It's a new generation. And like I said, I don't think, you know, they want to call it they're getting softer. Well, I think every generation gets softer. I was asked the other day, they said, "Booney, are you a tough guy?" I said, "Shit, I'm really tough." And they said, "Are you tougher than your dad?" And I thought about it.
Right.
And I said, "I don't think I'm tougher than my dad. I think my dad's tougher than me." And they said, "Well, is your dad tougher than your grandpa?" And I'm like, "Shoot, my grandpa grew up in the Depression." I said, "No, Gramps is way tougher." So I think each generation you get a little weaker, you know, and our kids, their kids are going to probably be weaker than them, you know.
But you got you specifically and your brother are a little different because the majority of the time, when a player makes it to the league, they go through some things that their kids don't have to, right? So the way I grew up, totally different from the way my kids grew up, right?
So that's a good point.
You really don't have the access and those things. And I wouldn't trade it for the world, but you guys have seemed to, you and your brothers, I seem to be able to have those experiences, but still be able to go out, compete, grind. And you guys also made it and played at the top level for an extended period of time. I'm not sure if that's the difference in sports, because football, I play corner, and I think it's the toughest position in all of sports. And I know, you get some kickback about hitting the baseball, but
right.
I looked at corner a lot like being a baseball player, being up at bat. You know, I'm versing, instead of the pitcher, it's Jerry Rice, it's Michael Irvin, it's Randy Moss, it's Art Monk, it's all those great receivers. And we're, no matter what the defense is called, I'm basically one-on-one on every play. You can call a zone and this and that, but after about 10 yards, that's my guy. If he catches the ball, they're looking at me. And so football, a little different when your children get that access, it doesn't really help them elevate or learn some of those hard knock lessons that you and your brother had to go through and still were able to make it to the highest level. So I really appreciate that about you and your brothers.
Yeah, no, and I agree with you, because the kids, you know, for what we were able to do in our career, your kids are going to have a little bit of an easier life, and you're going to be able to, I'd love to sit here and say that, my dad played in the big leagues for 19 years, man, it was a real struggle. I had to get hand me down shirts. No, mom took good care of me. You know, I got to go to USC. So you're right. But I never thought of it like that. You know, I had a one track mind is I'm going to play in the big leagues for 15 years. And if you're not sure about it, when I'm in ninth grade talking to my counselor, just ask me and I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I don't care what classes I take in college, because that's a foregone conclusion. The class just gets me on the field. And I really thought like that. I was so naive, but that's how I grew up. And yeah, with my family, you're going to have a little bit of a different. I'm sure you get certain questions asked to Eric Allen all the time. Well, my question is, well, your grandpa played and your dad played and you grew up at Veterans Stadium. It must have been a lot easier for you to make it. And I think about that question and I go, well, it wasn't easy. Trust me. I said, but did that help you? I said, I don't know how much it helped me. I know it didn't hurt me. I know that for a fact. It didn't hurt me. But I remember my first time I get called up to the big leagues, I had the butterflies like any rookie I assume would have. I've been in these locker rooms my whole life as a little snot-nosed kid bugging the players. But all of a sudden, you turn on and now this is your job. That's a different animal. Now we're going out there. I got to go face Pedro and I got to face Randy Johnson tomorrow night. That's like you that was a great point when you brought that up. You got Jerry Rice. Yeah. This Sunday, next Sunday, I got Michael Irvin. Who else? Yeah. And you're just helping for that, you know, in the baseball world, that's like, I got Randy Johnson tomorrow. Then I got Pedro. No, Clemens is around the corner. And I can't wait for that fourth or fifth starter that I get. Man, I can't wait to get that guy. Right, that's you probably with Jerry Rice and Irvin. You're like, who's their wide receiver? Oh, this is a walk in the park for me this week.
Yeah. And that's kind of how you look at it. You're like, you're pouring over film and, you know, the first time I played against Joe and Jerry, it was like, I was amazed. Like, how do these guys not complete every pass? I mean, they're just so smooth. Their timing's together. So, you know, when you face, you know, like the bottom of the barrel kind of guys, you're like, oh, man, you're licking your chops. You're ready to go.
You're right. You got a weekend off.
Yeah, right. You're like, please throw it over here.
I used to have this debate with Hasselbeck when I was in Seattle. He was in Seattle at the same time as me. And it would come up, you know, and it's fun to compare and contrast the sports. Cause I don't know if you're like this. I like to debate on every sport and right. I'll debate you to the end of the day. It's fun, but I love watching the other sports at the highest level because it's something you don't know. For you to go DB and for you to go cover Jerry Rice, it's not a big deal. You do it all the time. You put me on Jerry Rice, I'm gonna be like, whoa. You know, I think about that coming across the middle as a receiver. I think I'm tough, but I've never had to do that before. Whereas football players go, what's it like getting hit by a 100-mile-an-hour pitch? Oh, to me, it's no big deal. It's a part of the game. I don't want to come across the middle and have Eric Allen meet me in the middle when I'm not looking.
Give you the elbow.
Yeah. I never had to do that before. So it's just different, but I think it's cool. Always when I get, you know, I love going and playing golf with a PGA guy. When you get a chance to do it, just, it sounds different when they hit it, you know,
I have a really good, my high school pitcher on our baseball team was David Wells.
Like, oh, was it Boomer?
Yeah. You know, and David was awesome. And you know, when he'd come home from either the Yankees or Toronto or the Padres when he's here, we had a great opportunity to kind of kick back and talk because he was, you know, in the World Series here in San Diego against the Yankees, I believe. And I had been traded to the Raiders and I'd come home and watch the game. So in the offseason, we'd be able to kick back a little bit and just talk. And he's like, man, you wouldn't know what to do if you're up at plate, you know. And I was pitching. I was like, yeah, you're probably right. But if you're out on that football field.
How would you do? Yeah, how would you do, David?
Yeah. But just how growing up in San Diego, we really didn't play basketball much. It was a football and baseball city.
Right.
We have so many, you know, baseball players who've come from San Diego. And so as a youngster, you know, you dreamed of, you know, I dreamed of being Pete Rose, you know. And
right.
I love Dave Winfield and Ozzie Smith and all those players. And I think if you would have talked to me when I was 10 or 11 years old, I would have told you, I'm going to play for the Cincinnati Reds when I grow up. You know, that's kind of my dream to be in there. And so as, you know, my life goes on, it's just when you think about having to hit a fastball, a off-speed pitch, the curve, the slider, how much film work you have to do just to be prepared for all those things, those situations. So just in high school, I think those situations helped me be a better football player. Because once again, I have to kind of understand, like, is he running the out route? Is he running a go? Is it going to be some kind of double move? So that preparation, as far as a hitter, really helped me at cornerback and just being able to slow things down and like, hey, you know what? He likes to do this on first down. They like to do this on second down, on third down, this situation. Just being a situational player really helped me become, you know, a really good football player. And I owe a lot of that just to being a baseball player at heart.
I'll tell you what. I think especially with the kids today and a lot of kids growing up, they specialize and it's one sport. And I say, first of all, you're probably not going to the big leagues and you're probably not going to the NFL. So let's have a fun childhood. That's my first piece of advice. Well, when it gets serious soon enough, but I agree with you. I mean, my favorite was just from the playing the game aspect was basketball. I loved it. You know, 5'10 on a good day, I don't think I was going anywhere. And it kind of, the writing was on the wall, like, you're a really good baseball player and you're kind of okay at hoop, you know, you're athletic. Yeah, you're but right. I kind of knew I wasn't going to get any paychecks in that arena. But I think you're right. As much as the sports we play are so different, we have a lot in common. Yeah. Sport is transcend sport, I think. And I think you can learn on the football field. You learn lessons that help you on the baseball field, especially growing up. You learn lessons like you were mentioning being a hitter that helped you on the football field. And plus it gets you away from it. When you're a kid,
right,
you need a break. You know, you don't need to play 150 baseball games during a season when you're seven.
Right.
You need to go out and play football and play basketball. Maybe that's your passion. You got to find out what your passion is and you go with what you're best at usually as you get a little bit older. But it's interesting.
Yeah. It's so all right, difficult back to now.
Yeah.
It's so difficult now to talk to the young, you know, parents just to try and help them expose their kids to a little bit of everything and see what they enjoy. And it may not be the exact sport that they're great in, but that joy that they have for that other sport will ultimately help them in the sport that hopefully they can use to get a scholarship to go to college. So they can kind of lean on both things. And it really works. Your brain works a little bit different with every sport, right? So,
right.
And all those things will hopefully help you get to where you need to get to at least get a college scholarship.
Back to the Hasselbeck story. I used to debate with him all the time. I'd say, come on, Matty. I said, would he play 16 games? Big deal. He's like, yeah, well, you try playing 16 games. He's like, it's like, you know, and you hear it all the time, the old adage in the NFL. It's like, yeah, we're in a car wreck once a week. Yeah. I said, well, I'm an offender bender once a day. that's how I look at the baseball season. It's just little nicks and cuts along the way. And there's, you know, we debate back and forth, which is tougher mentally.
Right.
I've come to the conclusion they both have their upside. They both have their downside. You go play an NFL game, you play once a week. So it's equal to about 10 big league games. So you lose one game. That's like going 0-10.
Yeah.
But
wow,
you go out and have a great game. You're walking around for a week with a smile on your face. Who wants my autograph, right? You have a bad game, man, you can't wait for that week to be over. You got to ask questions. What happened last week, Eric? Yeah. Oh, shut up. Just get me to the next week. So I think there's the give and take there, whereas in baseball, when you're going good, you can't wait to get to the ballpark. When you're going bad, you're just hiding under a rock. Like, is it time to go? Because there's nowhere to hide. You know, you play every day, and it's like, you stink right now. I'm not seeing the breaking ball. And, I got Maddox, Smoltz, and Glavin. In the next 3 days, I got no chance. You know, I'm in a panic before I get in the car to go to the ballpark. So I think there's the pluses and minuses to both, especially from a quarterback standpoint. You have a big game quarterback. You throw four TDs, throw for 400 yards, and you win. Man, you're the king for a week, but quite the contrary. You get sacked, throw a bunch of picks, and you lose the game.
Right.
For a whole week, you got to answer a lot of questions. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do. First, the football aspect of it is, yes, you play once a week. the most important thing leading up to the week. It's like the week is like Christmas, and you have to get to Christmas through those practice. The week of practice is the most important aspect, in my opinion, of football. Sunday or Monday, whenever you're playing, should be fun. All the work you got to stack up during the week. So Monday is the day you come in, you review the film. You look at your mistakes, look at your, you know, if you had a great game, people are patting you on the back. Tuesday's a day off. You know, if you're a little older, you may come in and get started on some film. Wednesday's a first and second down. So I'm chewing up film. After practice, I'm still in the facility watching film for like an hour or so. So I'm not getting home till 7 or 8 o'clock. Thursday's nickel, third down, same thing, in film working. Friday, I shouldn't have any mistakes on Friday. My mental should be there. Physically, I should feel great. I've been in the ice tub all week. And then Saturday, you know, you have that walkthrough again. All verbal, great communication. And then, boom, you're here Sunday, and everything should really flow. If anything disturbs that week of preparation, you're going to play bad on Sunday. You're not going to play your best on Sunday. And so the week of practice, you have to have structure. You have to have accountability of the guys around you, because it's just not you. I could play great and my safety can have a bust and the play looks like it's me. So you really have to have a great week of communication. Athletically, you have to be at your best on Sunday, but that stuff all starts throughout the week. Baseball, on the other hand, it seems like you have to be at your best every game day. And it will be difficult for me because I'm like, where's the practice time? I'm like, when are you guys like practicing and maybe working on your swing? And that's the one thing that I really think is difficult for baseball. If you're going through struggles and you're playing the next day, I mean, you can't go to the ballpark, can you, like 2 hours before and take 1,000 cuts? You'll be tired before the game, right?
Right, but you do it because – when you get to that rare point where it's like nothing's clicking and I've got to figure this out, you find guys that you trust that can work with you. Sometimes it's a tiny adjustment. Sometimes it lasts 2 weeks. Shoot, I've had seasons where it's lasted and I'm in tears under the bleachers after the game. Nobody knows about it. But I'm like, what happened? I can't hit. I used to be a really good hitter. I can't hit anymore. But yeah, you're right. From a practice standpoint, especially at the big league level, when you get to the big leagues, because we have the minor leagues, like in the NFL, college is kind of your minor leagues. Right. Yeah. You have the minor leagues and you're expected when you get to the big leagues to be a finished product. So all your practicing's over. Now, off season, you hone your swing. You do what you got to do. If you got to make some adjustments, you got the whole off season to do it. Your ground balls, your footwork. Usually you're supposed to be a finished product. Spring training is for working on things, getting your legs under you, ready to go. Right. But from a day to day, at least in my career, very little practice. Now, hitting, always. Hitting's never going to go away. I'm always going to do my early work. And like you said, I had a routine like everybody else. I had certain checkpoints throughout the day. After batting practice, I go do this. I go eat my pregame meal. Then I go watch my film. Then I might do something else. And now all of a sudden, okay, game's at 7:05. I'm in the cage at 6:52. Mm. Now they got the machine and they crank it up. On a good day where I knew I was going to have a good night, I'd get that ball. They would throw me four or five pitches. And I just locked in. I go, I got it. Now, those are good nights. Those days where I'm hitting like 15 or 20 and go, hey, wait for me. I got to figure this out. Now I know I got to find a way to survive tonight. So baseball is just more of surviving on a daily basis. You don't have to win every night. Of course, you want to win every night. It's about winning series.
Yeah.
If we got a 3-game series, how are we going to find a way to win 2 out of 3? Because you're not going to win 3 out of 3. It just is not going to happen on a consistent basis. Now, you get on your runs. You rattle off 9 of 10. But you got to be able to – what I learned, and it was tough for me when I was a young player, I wanted to win. I wanted to get hit every at-bat, and I had a temper. And I remember some veteran players coming to me and said, listen, you're gonna have an ulcer. They said, hopefully you get to play this game a long time. You got to kind of just take the good with the bad. And I learned that as I got older. So I knew that baseball's baseball. So if I went 0-for-4, man, did I turn a big double play though that helped us win a game? I got to take the positive.
Yeah.
whatever you do after the game, I don't expect when you get your butt kicked and you're 0-for-4 to be in a good mood after the game.
Right.
Just like if you go 3-for-4, hit a 3-run homer, I expect you to be smiling after the game. But as soon as I left that locker room, today's over. Whatever is done today, because tomorrow's a new day. And it might be a humbling day for me tomorrow. So I learned that as I got older. Never get too high, never get too low. Because you have teammates that, you know, they love to dance and turn the music on when they're doing well. But when things aren't going good, they're in the corner in a fetal position. And I'm like, now that's a bad teammate right there. You know, so I always try to be an example, especially as an older player, is to I can't let my teammates, especially the younger ones, see me sweat, because they're looking to me. I've been here for a while now. I got to act like a pro. And the one thing I did, you know, we talk about my family and my father. My father never taught me one thing. You know, he was always playing. Mm-hmm. So I'd have a little league game and school would end. We go to, you know, for our game. Dad's already at the ballpark. So my dad growing up, he never got to see me play. And he didn't teach me how to hit. He didn't teach me how to field. Didn't teach me how to throw. But the one thing he taught me is how to be a pro, how to be a big leaguer. I respect the hell out of how he went about his business, how he carried himself, his behavior, the example he was. And he, you know, he was stud defensive catcher, not known for his offense, but he was clutch. But the way he went about his business, if anything in my life growing up, that's what I learned. I learned that's how you, when he walks into the room, that's how you behave as a Major League Baseball player. And so I always tell Dad that. And he's, you know, he's shy about it, but he's like, oh yeah, whatever. You know, I just did it. That's what I did.
You know what, Brett? That's interesting, because I think we all have had someone in our life like that. Maybe not fortunate enough to be your dad, but you know, when I was going through college, it was all kind of like I was just there to play college. I really didn't think that I could play in the league until like my last year, my, you know, junior year in college. It was a strike. And guys who I had played with came back from the strike to work out at college. And they were like, dude, there's dudes on our team who you guys are better than. And we were like, what? That's like, people are playing on Sunday. What are you talking about? So that's kind of when I started to think maybe I could do this. But before that, it was all about, you know, trying to win a Rose Bowl and getting Arizona State to its first Rose Bowl. When I got to the league, I had an older player, his name was Roynell Young, and he had played in the 1983 Super Bowl against the Raiders, and I specifically remember him because the Raiders were my team growing up. I specifically remember him playing against the team, you know, playing against the Raiders. And so now I'm in the locker room with this guy, and Brett, he was smooth, professional.
Yeah.
He went to a HBCU called Alcorn State. So he took me under his wing and showed me the city of Philadelphia. Would take me on Fridays to, you know, a nice restaurant. Hey, here's where you should hang out, you know.
Yeah.
I wasn't married at the time. So he would really show me how to be a pro. And I owe so much to him by, you know, just kind of laying the law down. And here's how you do it. And so hopefully I was able to do that, you know, with Charles Woodson, you know, who I played with later on, and many other players who came through the locker room when I was there.
Yeah, because it is important. And I had a couple guys when I first came up. Jay Buhner was one of them. He really, man, he gave me a hard time because I was a little different when I was 22 years. I thought I was the greatest player in the world. Then I got to the big leagues and I was playing next to Ken Griffey, who were the same age, and we're the same age. And I'm going, I didn't know they made him like that. So that was my first humble pie. But you know, I had that mentor, and then I tried to be that guy when I was older. And you talk about, you know, in sports, it's an overused term. They say, he's a leader. Well, what is a leader? A leader is a guy you look to, respect, not what he says, not the guy that holds the team meeting and yells at everybody. It's the guy that you watch him on the field and you go, I want to be like that. That's how you play the game. Those are the guys that really make a difference in your career. And I always tried to be that way. Maybe I was, maybe I wasn't, but especially to young players, always. I never gave the young players a hard time. You know, I remember when I was a kid, they used to put a dress on me, and they'd make me go on the charter flight with a mini skirt. That's what they do in baseball. And I took it smiling. I loved it. I didn't care. But when I got older and I was the one handing out the dresses to the, I wasn't into it. Cause I thought, you know, this game is so hard, and that guy pitching tonight is going to humble that kid. I don't need to humble him. We'll find out what he's made of. We'll find out what he's made of when he gets his butt kicked and knocked down.
Yeah.
Not too many of them can get up, but the ones that get up, then you pay attention and go, okay, he probably has what it takes to play this game and play it for a long time. A lot of guys can get to the big leagues. That's the easiest thing getting there. Can you stay there?
Right.
That's the biggest thing in baseball is a lot of guys get there and touch it, and they're there for a week or maybe a September call-up. But the guys that can stay, they're far and few between.
Yes.
It's interesting.
It's a battle of attrition, you know that?
Yeah. Yeah.
That first training camp, and there's 100 guys in camp, and guys are fighting for spots, and it's hot out there, and we're doing two-a-days, and guys are hitting, and everyone's trying to kind of get their name known. Because Buddy Ryan, he wouldn't put a name on the back of your jersey the first couple of weeks. He'd call you by your number, you know, 21 and 90. Well, except one, Reggie White. He always called the minister Reggie White. But
Reggie, yeah.
Anybody else. But you are exactly correct. It is about attrition, what you can do to separate yourself in those battles early on in your career, trying to get that positive reinforcement. And on a football team that you can kind of, at the end of training camp, have 53 guys all pulling the same way and understanding that every year is going to be a little different, but you want to try and make sure that the organization and your teammates understand that you're going to be accountable and you're going to show up each and every Sunday.
You've been watching playoffs at all, baseball?
Oh, my goodness. The National League is awesome.
It is, and the Padres are really good, by the way.
Yeah.
But here's my thing, and it's just a generational gap. Players are different now. Now, when I was a kid, I'd come watch you guys. I watched the football games, and there's always a lot of celebrating when the wide receiver catches and he's going to do a dance. That was what the NFL was.
Right.
Baseball wasn't like that.
No.
You know, we kind of put our head down, and you know, once in a while we'd smile, but for the most part. Because if guys were showboating in the big leagues, you're going to wear one in the neck.
Right.
That wasn't how we played. Now it's a different generation. These kids today, I look at them and I just was like, man, I couldn't imagine behaving that way. That being said, the more I watch, I'm kind of used to it now. And I think, well, this is this generation. This is how they express themselves. And I've kind of gotten over it. I kind of laugh at the beginning. You know, you see a lot of ex-players or old-timers and, oh, I can't believe they went. You know, this game will run you over. If you're going to be like that, life goes on. And we have to get to a point where we realize we can look in the mirror and say, we're ex-players. We're not players.
Yeah.
This ain't our game anymore. This is the kids' game. And however they do it, history will judge each and every generation. So it's not for us to judge. Me as an analyst, I still enjoy the game. You know, baseball's been my whole life. So as much as it's different and it's social media and it's your brand and everybody's got their name on their spikes, and it took me 10 years to get my name on my spikes, that's just the way it is. But at heart, we're still ball players. And I have a son that plays in the minor leagues. My son-in-law is shortstop for the Oakland A's.
Okay.
And I ask him sometimes, you know, because I watch all this and I say, and I'll pull him aside. I said, tell me in that locker room, you guys are like we were. And he goes, we're a lot more like you than you think. You know, so that makes me feel good. So now when I see guys doing stuff, you know, but I watch on the field sometimes and I just,
like,
I mean, I wasn't allowed to look at you crazy till like I had 2 or 3 years. These kids come to the big leagues in their first year, they hit their first homer and they're doing cartwheels and I'm going, you know, but if it's okay, but if it's okay with the pitcher and he doesn't have a problem with it, who cares if this old timer, this ex has been gives a crap, you know, it's like, it's not my game anymore. So
yeah,
I was just interested.
You know what though? on, of course, the diva receivers always celebrate and have a dance, and it is filtered through everyone who gets in the end zone. They have their celebration. I think the other day, one of our players may have gotten a sack, and another player comes to celebrate, and I think he may have hurt one of our players in the celebration in the middle of the game on a sack. And so those are the things that you
like, got to worry about.
You got to understand, like, we're in the middle of a football game here. It wasn't the sack to end the game. We're in the third quarter or something, and we just got to put just some common sense on some of the celebrations. I understand you're excited and you have your thing that you do, but let's just make sure we're using common sense in these situations. And I, because I'm the, you know, I'm running around the Raiders all the time now, and I'm just waiting to see someone practice their celebration, you know, during practice. And that's kind of where that's like, I'm gonna put my foot down right then. If someone is practicing their celebration, it has to be spontaneous. I feel like to really go over.
Right. Interesting. I want to see on the football side now, and the baseball side, especially with the money the way it is. And I'm not complaining. In our generation, you know, my last year was last time I had a uniform on was 2008, and we made good money. Don't get me wrong, but it's not like the money now. It's not like the money now. But as an ex football player, you probably get asked this all the time from fans when somebody gets a big contract. You know, this offseason is like, what do you think them giving Shohei Ohtani $700 million? I said, well, let me tell you this. I haven't met too many dumb owners, but he knows right there the Japanese market and the memorabilia he's going to sign is probably going to get him $500 million. He probably knows what he's doing. That's a lot of money. I couldn't imagine signing a $700 million deal. Those didn't exist in my day. I mean, we had Alex Rodriguez sign that $250 million, and it was like him. And then the rest of us were down here. No one was even close. Right. But I explain it, and I'm sure in the football side to fans and just people you interact with on a weekly basis, they've got to come to you and go, hey, Eric, what do you think? How'd they give Dak Prescott all that money? What's your answer to them? Well, it's just the way it is?
Well, I talk about how the sport has grown so much. And for these 7 months, it seems like every single day there's an NFL story. And every day there's a story, advertising, the league is getting paid, right? So the league has done an incredible job of outreach, incredible job of making itself commercial. The draft is humongous. Everyone fights over who wants to host the draft, the Super Bowl, the glamour, the attention that is put on the playoff games and the Monday night games, Amazon, everyone's bidding for it. You know, networks are willing to pay billions of dollars to get this live product on their platform. And the money has to go somewhere. So
I agree.
These players have put themselves in incredible spots. If you are a quarterback or you're a star receiver, or a pass rusher or even a corner, you're going to be able to take care of your family for decades. And I don't think I don't have any ill feelings or, you know, twisted about it. I love the fact that these young men are able to, you know, have some generational wealth, but the game itself is getting bigger and bigger every day. So I have no issues or problems with it at all. And I just really encourage these guys who are in college just to understand, like, off the field with the social media stuff, just make sure you're doing the right things so that doesn't come back to haunt you years later.
You know, it was funny, and you talk about the college level now and the NIL and the money people are making. I had Bo Jackson on the podcast, and I said, Bo, I said, how much money would you make in the NIL? And you know what his answer was? He said, Booney, I would have never gone pro. I'd have played college forever. I'd have made more money in college. I got a question about the NFL. Seems like baseball, with the exception, I played in Cincinnati for 5 years, and Marge Schott at the time was a very prevalent owner. So I got enough of the Shotzi O2 hair in my back pocket. I got it. But for the most part, in baseball, owners are kind of out of sight, out of mind. In the NFL, it seems like the owners are on the sidelines.
Yeah.
You know, and I think about Al Davis, Jerry Jones, and it's like they're on the sidelines, like they're getting into the dugout a little bit, to use the phrase, a baseball phrase. Right. The owners stay away from the players in Major League Baseball. It's, they might come to a game, but they have no input. They don't say anything. How is your interaction as a player with whatever team you're on, the owner?
Right. Yeah.
I think it's different than baseball.
Yeah. I think there's been a huge changing of the guard with ownership. For the most part, you still have your pillars, your families that own the football teams. Kansas City Chiefs, obviously, the Hunts, dug in. Dallas Cowboys, they probably have the most prominent owner in the National Football League. And then you have the other guys who have come in who are pretty new. They're not the ones who are on the sideline as much. The reason I think owners get to the sidelines because they have a history in the game. They brought up, they were there when they were first kind of organized. These families were there when they were first trying to organize the National Football League. They may have played football, you know, with some of the people that their children were playing with at times. So it just seems like that connection with those guys, if you're talking about the Dallas Cowboys, that's his puppy. That's his, and he hired, his first hire was Jimmy Johnson. Jimmy and him played football together, right? So he thinks he can make personnel moves. He thinks he knows as much as the head coach, right?
And by the way, if you own the team, you actually can.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't suggest it, but.
Yes. The great Al Davis. Al Davis held every single position in an organization. He was a head coach for the Chargers. Back in the AFL days, he was a general manager and then became the owner of the Raiders. So they have a personal touch to the product on the football field. They have a relationship with the quarterback. They chose the running back or the DB out of college back in the 70s or 80s. So that tie-in, that buy-in is really real for them. They feel like they deserve to be on that football field, because they chose some of those players. The younger guys or the families or the organizations who purchase it now, some of them, the 49ers, for instance, hands off. You know what? You do your thing. I'm going to let John Lynch, you know, organize and get the players. I'm going to let Coach Shanahan coach the players. I'm hands off. I'm just going to hopefully be back to celebrate the championship. So you see there's a split there. Right now with the National Football League. Of course, you have the Jerry Joneses and you have the Lamar Hunts, those families who still are tied in to the personnel packages, to their families owning the football teams. And then you have the new guys who are kind of hands off. We're going to try and get a GM and a head coach to kind of run the ship for us.
It is interesting. And I think the best, you know, I'm just thinking to myself, if I'm an owner, what do I do? Well, I get the best general manager I know. And he puts together a team for me. I get the best coach I know, and that general manager gives me the players. And that's how it works. Right. Yep. And if you can have a general manager and a head coach that are on the same page and are like-minded, man, now you got something.
Yeah.
But
do you as an owner have a type of team that you want, baseball or football? Like a type of team, like, so if you're an owner and you had an opportunity to buy a team.
Oh, are you talking for me?
Yeah, for you.
I would definitely own not a baseball team, because I think, and my ego would get to me, I think I know too much about this game. So I can go down and do your job and your job and your job. I think I can do it better than you. So yeah. I'd probably be that pain in the neck owner. I would have a different an NFL franchise or an NBA franchise, because I don't know. So I'm going to go out and I'm going to find the best general manager I can find that money can buy and the best head coach and just enjoy it and kind of be a fan of it. You know what I'm saying? Instead of sticking my nose in, because I got no business. I don't know the X's and O's. I don't know. I don't know if it's a go route. You know, I don't know nothing about it. So I think that's right. Yeah. Baseball, there'd be too many chefs in the kitchen. I'd be up there, be like, all right, come here, general manager, come here. Let me tell you why you don't do that. And Skipper, come here. the manager on the field. Listen, what are you doing in the sixth inning? When, you know, I would be too hands on, so I'd have to go to a different sport.
Yeah, I hear you.
We talked about both of us growing up the way that we did. I want to know, what was Eric Allen like as a dad to his kids on the athletic field? Because you know, you're this NFL legend. Everybody knows when you're at your son's football game, hey, that's Eric Allen playing in the NFL. I learned from my dad, when he did rarely get to come see me, he was out of sight, out of mind, didn't say anything, didn't, with that ride home in the car was nothing. If it was a good game, it was positive reinforcement. If it was a bad game, it was kind of quiet. And he would wait for me to come to him. Now, I ask him a question, pull up a chair. I'm going to be there for 20 minutes. But he didn't push anything on me. He was very hands-off until I had a question. And as life went on, we had a really good rapport, especially professionally. When I was in the minor leagues getting to the big leagues, man, I could lean on my dad for a lot of stuff. And we had kind of a player-coach relationship. And then we knew when to turn that off and it wasn't time for work anymore. Then he was my dad. But it was really cool having that mix, that professional mix. Like if we were in the cage, my dad was one of my best hitting instructors. I used to, when I was struggling, I'd send him an airline ticket and he'd fly to Cincinnati and meet me under the stadium at noon. And maybe you can help me because it's my dad. What were you like with your kid? I think you had a son that went to Cathedral, right? Cathedral Catholic.
I had a couple went to Cathedral, and I was fortunate enough to be able to coach my kids in every sport, baseball, basketball, football. And during practice, I was the same with them as I was with everyone else. When we got home, I would never ask them to do anything that first I wouldn't do as far as training. And because I think that's the biggest part of sports for me is the stuff that you do outside of the sport, the training. Just
the preparation,
the preparation, walkthrough, things like that. So I was a big proponent of putting in work off the football field, off the diamond, off the court. There's always a hoop somewhere around. If you want to work on your 3-point shot, your dribble, I'm the first to set up cones and go through it, but I'm not going to drag you there. You got to want to do it.
You got to want to do it.
I will move heaven and earth.
Yeah. If you don't want to do it, you're wasting your time.
Yeah. Why am I going to throw bat in practice if, you know, you don't want to hit, you don't want to get better.
Right.
And so that was my only thing. And like I said, I'll move heaven and earth. I'll do it. And if I'm not good enough, I'll find somebody else. As long as you are the one that is initiating that.
Right.
And I hope all my kids and my granddaughter understand that I'm here with the cones, with a ball, with a field. You just show me some grass or a hill, we can get some work in still today. <you know? laughs> So I hope they appreciated that. And I was never one to walk on the field as a coach was doing his thing and say, hey, excuse me, you know, do it this way.
Right.
I was never that guy. I was always just there. I would tape practice at times. Tape games. If you wanted to, after the game, we come on, we break down film with yourself, find out where we can get better, those kind of things. So I was always that kind of guy that kind of dad who was ready to put in, you know, the work to get better, but you had to really initiate it. And I had to see that passion in you. And luckily for me, you know, most of my boys, you know, had that passion and they always wanted to work and it became fun for us, you know. So
right.
I remember, you know, my oldest being in the backyard, you know, throwing up, you know, balls and having to hit to the left field, right field, you know, when he was 8 or 9 years old. So we still have those great times, and hopefully they appreciated that.
Yeah, and I always left my kids with, listen, you go at it as hard as you can. And at the end of the day, you got to be able to look in the mirror and say, did I do everything I could have done? Yeah. Well, if I did, well, then that's all I can do. That's all I could do. Everybody's not going to make it. I've got a son in the minor leagues. And I told him, I said, you know, when you're done playing, when this ends, and who knows, Maybe you'll get some time in the big leagues. Maybe you won't. But when you hang it up that day, or they take that uniform away from you, as long as you can look in the mirror and go, you know, I did everything I possibly could do. You can move on with your life, have a successful life, and never look back. It's right. The guys that aren't all in. When that end time comes, you might wander around life for 4 or 5 years going, man, could I have done more? Did I give it everything? And you're going to have that resentment in your mind. Like, man, what do I think? There's not more peace than being able to walk away from the field. Cause it happened to me in my career. I walked away in 2006 and then I came back in 2008 and I had to just, it was eating at me. And I trained as hard as I've ever trained for that off season. And I came back and man, my legs weren't there anymore like they used to be. And I couldn't play every day. And I ended up officially retiring after 2 weeks into the season of 08. But I was okay with it. I walked away. I said, and they said, oh, you wasted all this time getting in shape. I said, that wasn't a waste of time because I wouldn't have had peace if I didn't. I was a shell of what I used to be. I could be a contributing player on the team, but I happened to be on the Washington Nationals, and that wasn't a very good team. And that year they were going to lose 100 games. And I just thought, when I'm at my best and we're winning, this game is really hard. If I'm half what I used to be and I'm getting my butt kicked every day, this doesn't sound like a lot of fun to me. So, you know, when I walked away at the end, that last time, it was like, I'm good, you know, and I was appreciative for everything I got to do in my career.
Great point.
You're working for the Raiders now, broadcasting analyst for the Las Vegas Raiders, 2-3. I think out of the gates.
Yeah.
Vikings. I'm looking at the Vikings. I'm looking at the Niners.
Yeah.
The Niners have had a lot of injuries. I'm looking at KC. Is everybody just waiting around? Is just KC that thorn in everybody's side? Like, who's going to beat them? Washington's off to a great start.
Yes.
Give me a little quick wrap of what do you think about the NFL this season so far?
Well, let's start with the AFC and first, you know, start with us. We don't have the quarterback who's going to be our franchise guy. So the plan was to get like a veteran quarterback that can come in and help this team kind of get over this hump, being that 9-10 win. So you're fighting for a playoff at the end of the season. It hasn't worked. Offensive line hasn't played well. We don't run the ball particularly well. So that's not protecting our quarterback. So lots of issues. And then we're kind of up and down. The big news is, of course, our all-star, soon-to-be, you know, Hall of Fame receiver Davante Adams has asked for a trade, and I understand he wants to be in meaningful football games for his career. I understand that. So that's kind of like the news today. So we're kind of up and down, struggling, disappointing losses, huge win against Baltimore. So I'll put that to bed. The top of the mountain, obviously, the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah.
And not only do they have – you know, the best quarterback in the game right now, Patrick Mahomes, who has a baseball background. And if you look at any of his throws on game day, it's like a shortstop at times. Body's toward it one way. He's able to get velocity on the ball. He kind of thinks kind of like a baseball player at times when he's at the quarterback spot. Just has everything. Not the best runner we've seen in the past, like Michael Vick and, of course, Baltimore Ravens or Randall Cunningham.
Right.
But he has enough to be able to make it happen, right? He's not Lamar Jackson, but the guy's crazy great outside the pocket. I thought Monday night's game was a show to the NFL that, yeah, you don't think we're at our best, but it's Monday night. We're the lone game. We're going to show you just how good we are. They put on the show. Juju Smith-Schuster left their team 2 years ago, I believe, played with the Patriots. The Patriots cut him. He had over 100 yards receiving last night. I mean, Kelce, who's, you know, really struggled the first couple weeks of the season. You know, he didn't have a great offseason as far as preparation-wise. He's hanging out with Taylor Swift. Comes out and has just a great performance, right? They lose a receiver, Rashee Rice, and their young guy scores a touchdown. So they just kind of put everyone on notice. They have a great defense, too. I love Chris Jones. He's their defensive tackle. Every time there needs to be a moment where they need pressure on the quarterback, it doesn't matter what quarter it is, he makes it happen. So the Chiefs kind of flexed last night on Monday night and just let everybody know where they were, and it's still their lead. On the NFC, all these teams were supposed to be great. Minneapolis has a great head coach with an amazing teams of coordinator, kind of put the screws to the Jets in London, forced the Jets and firing their head coach because they look so bad. But yeah, that Minneapolis Vikings defense playing at a very high level. And then the quarterback was one of the first players to take, I think it was top three, maybe 5 to 7 years ago for the Jets, and spent a year in San Francisco. And Sam Darnold right now is playing lights out, doing a great job for this young head coach. So the Vikings looking good. I like Detroit. I like their mentality, how they get after it. Their coach is talking about biting ankles and, you know, the first one in the pile needs to do this and that. And they've really solidified their team around a really rough defense and a power run game. And Jared Goff does a really good job also. Then I'll wrap it up with the Washington Commanders with a new coach. Jaden Daniels, the young quarterback out of LSU, is really playing at an extremely high level. And if they were able to get a up-and-coming receiver or a big-time receiver, I think they could take over the NFC East, because the Eagles right now are struggling, the Giants are struggling, and the Cowboys have too much money tied into Dak to be able to kind of help their defense right now. So the Washington team is playing really, really good football right now, and happy for them after the mess they came out of with their ownership group and, you know, the head coach and all that stuff. So right now it seems like the Minnesota Vikings, the Kansas City Chiefs are headed right now to maybe a outstanding Super Bowl.
And you talked about Robert Saleh getting fired. Yeah. It seems like that happens a lot when you're coming home from London. It's happened like three times. It's like maybe that's such a long flight that the owner has time to think about it, maybe has a few drinks, decides we're going to shit can him. But on a serious note, though, when you're in the NFL, and I don't know if you were on teams that this happened, how does that affect a team when your skipper, skipper for the baseball term, when your head coach gets fired that early in the season?
Yeah, I've been on a team like that, and I was in New Orleans, and Jim Mora he wasn't really fired. I think he quit. He came into our meeting on Monday, and he said, "Hey guys, I offer my resignation," and they accepted. "I'm out of here." And the room was like, we're in a kind of like an auditorium, you know?
You're like, "Don't you like us? What'd we do wrong?"
Yeah. And the first thought that came to my mind, because I was probably in year 8 or 9, I had just been traded, and we had a brutal training camp. I mean, it was like 3 days. We were hitting full on the first 2 practices. Then the 3rd practice was all conditioning. So I'm thinking, wait. You're going to make us go through all this stuff in training camp, and here it is, week 4 or 5, and you're about to get up out of here when we got to stay around here. So I was disappointed that with football, it really is about working through those difficult times.
Right.
Being able to be accountable, understanding that it's not always going to be great and you have to find a way. And I just thought he bailed out way too early for our football team. But there was a ton of guys who were excited, who like, "Man, finally I can kind of be me." And those guys were not the kind of guys you want in the foxhole. Guys who think they can just kind of practice, and they just took it as a 9-to-5.
Right.
Football is not a 9-to-5. It's 24/7. You know, there's some things you got to work through. So that interim coach really had a difficult time getting the team to bond and play together. And just didn't work out right. On the other hand, Raiders, 1.5 years ago, we fired Josh McDaniels to hire Antonio Pierce in the middle of the season. The team took off, and everyone supported it. And it's just a difference of coaching styles. I thought Josh McDaniels, his style of coaching was New England, buddy, we're in Vegas. We don't have Tom Brady. This is not New England. And I thought the players really responded to Antonio Pierce because Antonio Pierce had played the game, understood there's difficult times, but these are times when we really find out who you are as a man, as a football player. And the team really bought into that and had great success over the latter part of the season. So, yes, it is difficult times, but if you have the right coach who can come in and grab that interim head coaching style and kind of get that football feel, you can have some really positive days.
Yeah, I mean, the potential is, well, you either stink and you stink for the rest of the year, or it's a rallying cry. Yeah. And next thing you know, it's like, man, we knew you were this good. Where was it?
Right.
All right, last thing, and I'll let you out of here. You went to Arizona State. I went to USC. We're Pac-10 guys. We've always been Pac-10 guys. We're not Pac-10 guys anymore. And all the football guys now that I have on the show, I got to ask them. I'm now a Big 10 guy. You're a Big 12.
Big 12.
What are your thoughts on this? Obviously, there's a lot of money to be made or they wouldn't be doing it. You know, football's one thing. Football's one thing in college because, like for baseball, we're the Pac-6. So it was Arizona State, U of A, SC, UCLA, Stanford, and Cal.
Right.
And we just – that's where we played. Now, all of a sudden, you're going across the country. For football, that's one thing. They probably travel like the NFL, probably have a charter flight. You're everything's paid for. We get the nice hotel. We get in the night before. You don't miss any games. But I'm thinking of the secondary sports.
Yes.
I'm thinking of the lacrosse team or the swim team. Or it's like
baseball.
Baseball. You've still got school to do, right? Oh, so if you go on the East Coast from a cost-effective way, you're not chartering a flight for the baseball team. Believe me, the budget ain't there. Right, so you're getting on a commercial flight. You're going there. You're bussing 2 hours. And you, since you're back there, you got to find a way to play 7 or 8 games. So you're missing 10 days. So that side of it, I get the football side. I get the dollar. And they're probably making a lot of money. It wouldn't make any sense if they weren't making money for the other sports. It's going to be interesting how it shakes out as we see this in 2 or 3 years. But your thoughts on this big change.
Well, Brett, it is a big change, humongous. And obviously, it changed because of money. And
always does.
I worked for the Pac-12 network like 7 or 8 years ago. And I saw firsthand how Larry Scott just really ruined the Pac-12 conference by trying to avoid ESPN and Fox to kind of go it alone and really emphasize the Olympic sports. And that's great. I appreciate you trying to emphasize the Olympic sports. His background was tennis. So he thought that he could sell the Olympic sports overseas. That doesn't pay the bills, buddy. Football pays the bills.
Yes, it does.
And he just was really put our conference in a really bad situation to where the SEC, the Big Ten, and a little bit more of the Big 12 was able to garner those contracts and create a relationship with ESPN, with Fox Sports, so they can get those big paydays. So now your school, USC, is thinking to itself, hey, I'm not seeing a big payday. And some of these schools in the Big Ten and the SEC are being big paydays. They don't have the brand that we have as USC. I need to be on television at noon every weekend. I need to be able to host the biggest recruits. So USC was really the big footprint that started the exodus of the rest of the leagues. Now, I hoped that they would have done more regionally. And for USC and Oregon and Washington, UCLA, to go to the Big Ten was great football-wise. And, you know, Oregon right now, next week, is going to play against Ohio State, #1 against them. That is amazing content for us viewers. But for the softball team, they have to fly back to play Rutgers.
Good luck.
What do you do school-wise? And so they leave and leave Stanford and Cal all by themselves, basically. Mm-hmm. They sign up to go to the Atlantic Coast Conference. Their teams are going to be playing on the Atlantic Coast. How do you handle a project at Stanford?
Right.
You have to spend a week back in. So I understand how football kind of runs it, but right. there was no thought of all the other minor sports in this deal, in my opinion. I think it should have been done regionally, where Arizona State, you're still dealing with Oklahoma, Texas Tech, Baylor, those schools. That's not a huge difference. But the Big Ten out in the West Coast, the ACC on the West Coast, with those Olympic sports, it's going to be a nightmare for those young men and women.
And I think, too, when I was making my decision, because back when I was coming into college and my first year of college was 88, the Pac-10 for baseball, that was the big conference back then. Now it's the right. SEC. But part of my, you know, part in the recruiting process, I'm like, well, I get to go to school in Southern California. I get to play in Arizona State. Yeah. The weather's perfect baseball weather everywhere right. I play. Now, all of a sudden, you got to go to the East Coast in February. There's a reason those big league teams are in Florida and Arizona for spring training. That's it's because right. it's not it ain't football. It's not baseball right. weather. It's football weather. We're playing baseball now. So they're going to get from a recruiting process. Like, now, why would I sign with SC now? Now I will go to the SC. I'll sign with a Florida team, you know. Right. So it'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out. Be. Well, I appreciate
it. I'm really bummed about that, man. But
yeah, it's weird. It's weird. Well, Eric, I appreciate you coming on, man. This is a lot of fun.
Hopefully next time I'm on with you is after the Super Bowl. And
yeah.
I was a finalist for the Hall of Fame last year.
Yes. I didn't want to jinx anything. I didn't want to jinx anything. Because I know what's coming up for you. I know what's coming up, and I wish you the best with that, man. That's a pretty awesome thing. I appreciate it. I'll catch up with you when I catch up. And yeah, I'm going to take you up on that too. When we get to the end of the playoffs and the Super Bowl right. and you get that Hall of Fame call, then yeah. I'm really going to have you on. Then I got a real superstar on the show. No, I'm kidding. Awesome. I appreciate it, Eric.
Okay.
For all of you watching the Brett Boone podcast, now we have our own YouTube channel. Check it out. Those of you listening to the podcast on the Odyssey app, wherever you download your podcast. Until next time, keep it here.